It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. And for the first time, as I'm sure you noticed on the logo, we have a presenting sponsor, a title sponsor, betonline.ag, the online gaming website of choice for the Fantasy Feast podcast with the best odds and fast payouts. Speaking of odds, your odds to get in the August MFL 10 contest go up anytime you send me a sponsor confirmation. This week's winners, the first two winners for the August MFL 10 contest, Nicholas Schmoller, I can't remember the sponsors he sent me, and Joel Henry, who sent me a couple of different Amazon purchases. Congratulations, Nicholas and Joel. We will be naming a couple more contestants each and every week through the rest of this month of July, and then we'll have the draft in August. So you want to get on this MFL 10 with Evan and I? You can do it. Speaking of getting in on something, anytime you can get on the conversation with the guru, John Hansen, you do it. Fantasyguru.com. Let's eat.
Next meal.
Anytime you get a chance to talk with a guy named Fantasy Guru on the Fantasy Feast podcast, you take it. This guy basically invented fantasy football, although we've had him on before, and he gave the whole story about it was like the Raiders team. Oh, who is it? Who was the guru? The Raiders owner or something?
Yeah, Bill Winkenbach, who was a minority owner of the Oakland Raiders, is credited for starting the first fantasy football league in which Ron Wolf was in the league. And I actually talked with John Madden about it, and Madden actually didn't even know that. He was like, you know what? Now that I think back, Winkenbach was always asking me about players and doing his scouting. Well, he probably did it for fantasy football.
That is unbelievable. I love that a minority owner was the guy that started fantasy football. Before we get in, I got a bunch of questions for you, Guru, and I know that Evan does as well, always. You kind of had some news, I don't know if it was your radio show or your podcast on Monday, with Adam Schefter suggesting that, you know, there's a real chance that Zeke Elliott might be suspended or might miss some games. What exactly did Adam say to you guys?
Yeah, I asked him the question because this time of the year, we're always worried about the off-the-field stuff, guys looking at suspensions and all that. And really, other than Zeke, it seems to be pretty light out there. So then I did ask him about Zeke. And obviously, he's a veteran reporter. He's going to kind of take both sides a little bit, not to put himself out there and cling to one side of it. But, you know, little mixed messages that he's hearing. And he did kind of drop a little bit of a hint that something could be coming down from the league in terms of all the off-field transgressions and, you know, the allegations, if you will, and all that. So that is a huge, huge storyline. I've tried to have like a blind spot to it all off season as I kind of, you know, project him and break it all down. But something could come down here. I'm going to give it, you know, just as a guess, you know, it's 50-50 that something comes down. Maybe it's just one game and it's not that huge of a deal, but there's no question about it, guys. This kid is a little worrisome. I mean, on the field, obviously, no questions whatsoever. Just blown away by the player, and he was as advertised big time. But, you know, off the field, like, the dude's getting into a car accident like every fourth day of the week, it seems like. Other instances of behavior that, you know, you don't feel good about. So let's just be on guard for this, that something could come down with Zeke Elliott by the time week one rolls around.
You are locked into guys when you're making best ball decisions. You can't go pick up Darren McFadden. You are locked into the players that you draft. And over the past two seasons, since Elliott entered the league, he's been accused of domestic violence. He was spotted in a weed shop in Seattle. He was caught on camera pulling down a woman's top on St. Patrick's Day. He was involved in multiple car accidents. I mean, it's just, it really seems to me like just a young kid, you know, making mistakes, you know, or kind of just putting himself in precarious spots. And we can examine all those situations and minimize them. But, you know, if you are making best ball decisions right now, I mean, I think the right way to approach them is with a little bit of caution.
Yeah, and let's be clear, no one's reacting negatively to all this stuff. He's still going off the board like top three.
Exactly. So maybe
now, I mean, people will pull back a little bit. I mean, you can only go so far down the first round to where you have to slot him in no matter what. But, you know, proceed with caution, I think, is prudent advice.
Here's my question about that, Guru. And it could be Zeke or any player. How much do you drop them based upon how many games a suspension would be? In other words, if a guy's suspended one game, does that have any impact on you? If you suspended two games, how much of an impact? Have you ever looked at it that way? Do you have a suspension chart at fantasyguru.com?
No, but you know, you think back to, you know, Le'Veon Bell this past year, and how'd that work out? I mean, he missed the games early on, and he was still an absolute animal, 26.5 fantasy points per game. What's actually interesting about it is, and I think the last time I did this was Josh Gordon, I believe it was in 2013 when he opened the season suspended for the first two games. That's actually kind of a little bit of a buying opportunity, provided that the ADP drops relative to the suspension. So right now there's nothing going on with Zeke Elliott. People are still taking him top three, but you know, in the past, I've kind of looked at these suspensions as, you know, a little bit of a buying opportunity to get this guy at a discount, because, you know, it's not like if you can't start him weeks 1 through 3, let's say someone's suspended for three games, you're not taking a zero. You're going to use someone. So at the bottom line, it's all about impact players. So if you got an impact player, you know, you're willing to take on the chance at a little bit of a discount. We'll see if Zeke Elliott settles into a discounted place. I don't think so, but we'll see. If a suspension does come down, obviously that changes the narrative here. Then McFadden's a little bit more appealing. But again, if Zeke is suspended for three games, you're not taking a zero in those 3 weeks. And when he returns, you're going to have a beast.
What is, Guru, your general strategy this year? Because I feel like every year it's the year of, you know, take running backs right away, or wait on running backs, or take wide receivers right away. I mean, every year there's a buzz, I feel like, about certain position groups. Which one are you looking at, or how are you approaching, especially the top of the draft, I feel like is what people are thinking about the most?
I've never really changed my approach. I'm always about the best player available, regardless of position. Obviously, I'm inclined to hold off on quarterbacks. I've never been a zero running back guy. I was saying last year, you know, hearkening back to the year before in which the running backs, well, not last summer when I was hearkening back when we were reviewing 2015, which was a nightmare for running backs. I said, hey, guys, don't forget, just a year ago in 2014, if you invested a second-round pick on DeMarco Murray or a first-round pick on Marshawn Lynch or someone, it worked out pretty damn well. So I've always been about balance. My thing is I always want to get one stud at every position to kind of hang my hat on. So to me, the ideal start of a draft is running back, wide receiver, running back. Doesn't really matter. Let's just be a little cautious about the running backs. But I am all about getting at least one stud in the first three rounds. Ideally, for me, I'd probably go running back and two wide receivers with my first three picks. I'm always looking to hold off on the quarterback to get a value, obviously, and it's very deep this year. And I'm always, always looking to get some value for a tight end. I love Eric Ebron again this year. Maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but I see that kid improving. I see some targets vacating there with Anquan Boldin gone, and I see a talent that could absolutely blow up. Now, I will say this year at the quarterback position, I want to get – I'm not feeling Breeze, and I'm not feeling Rodgers, who, by the way, I did have at one last year over Cam. Not feeling Luck either, based on the draft capital that they command, and they do have some issues, I think, in New Orleans. Maybe they're going to run the ball a little bit more. The guys that I like are guys I didn't like last year, actually. Russell Wilson, I think he's a real nice value. I like Derek Carr. I thought people were going a little overboard last year, but I think he's ready to have that true breakout. I also like Kirk Cousins, Mariota, all these guys. Very, very good depth. But the one thing where I may zig where others zag is Brady. I'm willing to take Brady in the third round if it works out. And I don't love a running back or wide receiver on the board. I think it's a real difference maker. And I'll say this, I guarantee it, when we look back at the round that Tom Brady is drafted in every fantasy league, there will be some horrendous busts in that round, and Brady ain't going to bust. We all know that.
Guru, I've got some more questions for you maybe at the end, but I want Evan to be able to ask you some of the higher level questions that only fantasy experts can ask each other. So go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, what's up, Guru? First of all, I got a story to just kind of highlight the Guru's clout. So the first time, actually the only time I ever met Hansen in real life was at a fantasy sports conference where he was being inducted into the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame. And I was like over in a corner talking to a big fella by the name of Chris Dolman, who played about 15 years in the NFL, had over 150 sacks, was inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2012. And, you know, I'm over here talking to Chris Dolman. I think I'm a little starstruck. I think this is awesome that I'm getting to talk to him. And I've been hanging out with Guru a little bit earlier in the night. And I was like, hey, and I went up to Guru and I said, hey, that's Chris Dolman over there. And Guru, without any hesitation, goes up to him, gives him like a big bro hug. They have like a secret handshake. I mean, they've known each other for years. And I thought it would have been like special that I was like introducing Guru to Dolman. But, you know, I don't know. Guru might have been like Dolman's the godfather to his kids, for all I know.
But, well, Evan, I played that up truly to break your balls, and I really enjoyed it. And you kind of went for it. The fact that you're bringing up that story kind of makes the whole thing. So yeah, I do know Chris, but I really hammed it up to break your balls, and I'm glad that it affected you. That's good. We're in the ball breaking business. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. So I listened to your podcast with Cosell, you know, anytime that you guys do it. And I listened to the last one and you talked specifically about Derek Carr and how you think that this could be the year that he really steps forward as like an elite fantasy quarterback. I mean, he's been a fantasy starter the past 2 years, but you think that this could be the year that he maybe finishes as like a top five or top eight guy. Can you talk a little bit about why you see this as a breakthrough year for Derek Carr?
Yeah, absolutely. You're always looking for a young player who gets better every single year, and I think that's certainly the case. And when you look at this past year, he didn't truly break out, so I think there's a little bit of a buying opportunity. A lot of people were expecting this massive season last year. It didn't necessarily come. The injury was part of it. So I look at the situation, I'm like, well, this is an opportunity to get. I remember, like, you know, like Carson Palmer's breakout year, that was an obvious call. I think this is a fairly obvious call. His adjusted passing yards per attempt has increased every year. We all know how bad it was his rookie year. He wasn't chucking the ball down the field at all, 5.50. But it's getting better every year. I think the addition of Jared Cook will be a pretty significant one in terms of the middle of the field, an athletic weapon to take some pressure off of Cooper and Crabtree on the outside. Cordarrelle Patterson is a fairly interesting player, probably not going to get a ton of touches, but you add it all up, you got the offensive line there, you got Marshawn Lynch, you got familiarity with the personnel and the system. It's all there in year four for Derek Carr to truly blow up, and we all know he just got paid. He's a great kid, Ross. I don't know if you've ever met him, but I interviewed him at the combine before he was even drafted. I'm like, I'm talking to a 35-year-old dude here. I mean, he was like 21 at the time. But, you know, very good player. And at some point, he's going to have that true breakout. And why not year four? I mean, it's all lined up for him. So I really do like him. Plus, he's a solid value. You can get him in the seventh, eighth round. Not bad at all.
I like the point about Jared Cook. He really adds a new dimension to their offense. And Jared Cook, I don't know that he – I mean, he's never really been a consistent fantasy contributor, but he goes real, real late in drafts. I could see him as a guy who in season maybe we're looking at in daily fantasy if he's cheap or as just like a tight end streamer. He is an addition that no one is really talking about. At the opposite,
how much of a buzzkill has Clive Wofford been the last 2 years? I mean, they really were expecting big things from him, and you know now he's been basically replaced.
Ty Montgomery was at the opposite end of the spectrum. You sounded like you were real down on him. Can you talk about a little bit about Ty Montgomery and why you think he could be a bust this year?
Well, the optics don't look great in terms of they drafted three running backs. I know they weren't high picks. I felt like, look, it was an emergency situation almost last year. And it's funny because I asked McCarthy about him at the combine that year, and he talked about his intelligence, his football smarts, his versatility, and all that stuff. And that really truly came to the forefront. But I just don't know how you can survive without a more solid base running attack. I mean, Mike McCarthy he does like to run the football. I mean, remember back when he first came there, you know, Ryan Grant was getting 300 plus carries a week with a season with Brett Favre. So I just by the eyeball test and just using some common sense, I don't necessarily see a converted wideout, you know, producing consistently over the course of a full season with three running backs drafted that year. Now in PPR, he could certainly deliver, but I'm just overall not comfortable. I'm not buying it. His ADP I thought would be just a little bit lower. So it's just a guy that I'm just not, I don't have a comfort level with. Let's see. He's looks like he is the 19th running back off the board. Typically ADP around 50. I'm not feeling that. I think there are much more safer and reliable options on the board right around that time.
Seems like everyone at Fantasy Guru, you know, Graham Barfield and Dolan and yourself are sound pretty high on Kareem Hunt. Do you guys think that he is going to overtake Spencer Ware as the Chiefs starter, or will this be like an even backfield split? How do you see the Chiefs running back situation panning out?
Yeah, we do really like Kareem Hunt. Now, certainly there is a little bit of a disconnect there. I mean, the measurables are not great, but his college tape was outstanding. And I met the kid at the combine a little bit. I got a real good vibe for him. And, you know, Andy Reid, as you guys know, has a pretty lucrative history of producing real productive fantasy backs. You know, our guy Graham Barfield does his yards created thing, and he was the third in the class in terms of yards created running inside KC. They do run some of that stuff, and he can catch the football. And at the end of the day, you know, Spencer Ware, I mean, God love him, but this guy was a fullback for Seattle like 4 or 5 years ago. He wore down. He's a jag. I mean, let's be honest, he's just a guy. So I think Kareem Hunt, I mean, it's a little bit of a risky call if you really want to go all in on him, because it's probably going to be something where, you know, he doesn't take over until like week 6 or something. But I truly do believe that Kareem Hunt will be Andy Reid's new guy in this backfield, and I think it will happen this year. It's just a question of when. The good news is he's not really costing much in fantasy drafts, so I'm avoiding Spencer Ware around 40-50 overall, and I'm absolutely targeting Kareem Hunt maybe 30-40 picks later.
The running backs are going off the board really, really fast this year. I mean, all the good running backs, it seems, are gone by like very early in the third round. And then throughout the course of the third round, you'll be looking at a guy like Lamar Miller. Every so often, Todd Gurley will fall to the third round, but he usually goes late second. But then a little bit later in the third round, we start to see the rookies go off the board. And it's Joe Mixon, and it's Christian McCaffrey, and it's Leonard Fournette. Is there anybody among those running backs, those rookie backs, that stand out to you this year as maybe like the highest upside guy or the highest floor guy or maybe the riskiest guy? Just what do you think about those three rookie backs who generally go in the third round?
Well, it's got to be Fournette. I mean, you know, it's rare for a rookie to step in from day one and be a foundation player, but we all know what happened to Blake Bortles last year. So I think that will be the case. I did ask Fournette about his receiving at the combine, and he said that he simply was not utilized. He can catch the football. I think he is more comfortable than a guy like Adrian Peterson catching the rock. You know, McCaffrey is, boy, that's a tough one. I think it's Fournette all day. I love McCaffrey. Love the player. I want to be all in on him. And I actually feel very good about Olsen designing a pretty diverse rushing attack. And I feel good about McCaffrey running the ball along with Jonathan Stewart. You know, Cam, they did all the read option stuff, a pretty multiple diverse attack. But is Cam going to get him the ball in the passing attack? As we all know, Cam sucks. You know, throwing short passes, basically, is a deep ball thrower. And, you know, their backfield combined had just 44 catches last year. If McCaffrey gets 44 grabs, we're going to be pissed. So, I mean, that's a tough one for me. I have to see more in the preseason. So right now, I probably, if I did a draft today, I'm probably going to pass on him. Mixon, I do have an issue with Mixon. I get it. We all know that, you know, we're all sophisticated now. We understand skill sets, and we look at data and metrics and all that. And he's outstanding. He's a complete back. You can flex him from the formation, a little David Johnson in him. But the question I have is, and look, it probably helps that Giovanni Bernard is potentially out for a few weeks here to open the season. But, you know, you're drafting Joe Mixon in the fourth round. I mean, to me, a fourth rounder, I mean, that dude needs to contribute week one. I mean, are we literally starting Joe Mixon week one? I mean, he's going to take over, no question about it. But when? You know, I'm not exactly sold that it's week one or it's week two. I mean, to me, it could be week six, and that could hurt you a little bit if you invest a fourth round pick. So I think people are being very, very proactive about it, which, you know, I kind of like that. That's kind of been my style. But in this case, when everyone's being so proactive, I'm like, you know what? Ho, let's hold back. So I guess with Mixon, guys, and McCaffrey, I got to see the preseason play out. I got to see how they're fitting in. I know it's only preseason football, but I need to see them to get a better handle. But right now, I'm a little cautious with those two guys. So it's Fournette all day. I have him as my number 11 running back. He should get 300 touches, and there's a lot to be said for that. Not a lot of true bell cows out there. And you mentioned the running backs going off the board. That's why I think it's imperative. Just get that one stud to hang your hat on, and there's plenty of depth after that.
So this is the lowest of Adrian Peterson's career that he's ever been drafted. He will go 7th, 8th, 9th round. All the reports have been super positive. You guys talked about this on the show with Cosell. How are you approaching Adrian Peterson this year? And how are you also approaching the other guys in that backfield, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara?
Yeah, it's certainly a tough call. I have Peterson over Ingram. I don't know if that's even a common ranking, but it's clear they don't like Mark Ingram. I was telling Ross on the radio the other day, like 5 years ago, I had a Twitter campaign, hashtag free Mark Ingram. It's like, what the hell? You moved up into the first round, I believe that was 2011, and you kind of sold the future to get him, and then they didn't use him. And then when they finally did use him, well, lo and behold, the guy was pretty damn good. But clearly there are some issues there. You don't bring in Adrian Peterson with a Drew Brees quarterback team to give him 8 carries a game. So I think Mark Ingram is hurting. He's in trouble. I don't know what to do with him. I don't know if a lot of people know what to do with him in terms of the ranking. Maybe he gets traded, something like that. But I do think that there is an opportunity with Peterson. I will say this. I don't think his skill set has fallen off that much. I watched him, you know, closely last year, as many carries as I could. The O-line was horrible. I mean, the yard per carry average was wretched. But I don't necessarily think that was his fault. My biggest concern is, based on his age, he's 32, the wear and tear. Will that simply lead to more injuries? I mean, he is a human being, flesh and blood. But if he's on the field and healthy, I still think he has a skill set to be a big-time difference maker. Now you give him a big upgrade in the O-line. Armstead, that injury is a little bit of a buzzkill, but it's a nice O-line. We've had them in our top 7 the last few years. Now you're also tied with Drew Brees in that great offense. So I think it's a solid situation for Peterson. I think there is a buying opportunity. And I will say this too, you know, people say, oh, Sean Payton. I mean, I do remember in 06, his first year there with Deuce McAllister. I mean, that was a major foundation player in that offense along with Reggie Bush. And maybe it's time, guys, to just pull back just a little bit from Drew Brees throwing it 670 times a game. You know, I only have him with, I mean, I have him with like 40 fewer attempts, I think like 605 or something like that. So I think maybe not quite as much passing this year from Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, Peterson is tempting to me because of where he goes in drafts and his touchdown upside and playing behind that O-line. That last year, Football Outsiders had them as the best run-blocking line in the league, and they did lose Armstead, but they were missing him. They missed him a bunch last year, too, and they used a first-round pick on Ryan Ramczyk. So they have a guy that should be able to come fill in pretty quickly, and they added Larry Warford, that big old right guard from Detroit. I mean, dude weighs like 340 pounds.
And people don't realize that 80% of Ingram and Hightower's carries last year, you know, Breeze was under center. I mean, it's not like, you know, they're going to ask him to kind of, you know, carry the ball out of shotgun, which he very, very rarely does.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could kind of be like this year's LeGarrette Blount, where he could be a high touchdown scoring running back. I love him in best ball, and I'm going to try to get him in.
That's a great comparison, Evan. That really is. Yeah.
Redskins running backs, it's kind of a similar situation to the Chiefs, where you have a middle round rookie coming in to battle the incumbent who is not like an overwhelmingly great talent, but, you know, has done some good things in Rob Kelly. Where are you guys on, specifically Hanson, on Samaje Perine as a player, and can he come in and just and grab this starting job early?
I don't see any reason why he couldn't. Rob Kelly was undrafted free agent, made the team, did a nice job, but he's another guy. He's just a guy, no question about it. I think Perine is a little bit more explosive. I think he's moves a little bit better, a little bit more lateral agility. He was above average in yards created per rushing attempt on inside, outside zone, shotgun, all that. We liked him better than Deontay Foreman, I'll tell you that, in terms of a big dude like a Jerome Bettis type. And I think that fits what they want to do, pound that rock, Gruden. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, we could be wrong when we make these calls, but I'm projecting Perine to be the guy by, let's say, September's end.
I like it. All right, and this is the last one, breaking down another difficult running back a difficult backfield to project right now. I mean, look, these are all competitive situations, and we'll have a better idea in August. But you know, it's really hard to project competitive situations. And another one is in Seattle with Eddie Lacy, CJ Procise, and Thomas Rawls. How do you see this working out in Seattle?
Well, I think first and foremost, they do like Procise quite a bit, and he's going to be their third down back at worst, and you know, your change up. If you look at Eddie Lacy, you do see some Marshawn Lynch there. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he's Lynch like. I can see it. He actually had last year, as you likely know, Evan, a career best yards after contact in 2016. He actually popped off a long run like pretty much every game. He looked okay. I think Pete Carroll and they want the size. I almost feel like Pete Carroll is okay if he becomes fat again, you know, after Labor Day, like he did last year. I think he kind of likes that. We'd like to see him a little bit slimmer or trimmer, but you know, Thomas Rawls, I know he's having a great off season and all that. I don't necessarily see him truly pushing Lacy unless Lacy has issues. So he's going to put Lacy on notice. And if Lacy's at his best, I think we could probably count on him for 15 touches, but I also think that Procise is going to be very involved. I know they're very high on him, and you know, it's probably for the best that he's a little bit more of a role player in a dual backfield, if you will, because durability, thy name is not Procise. He does have some issues there. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm targeting Lacy, but I can totally see him, you know, doing well. But I like kind of Procise the best out of all of them in terms of the upside potential, because I thought, boy, I don't know about you, Evan, but when the season ended or right before he got hurt, I'm thinking about CJ Procise next year. I'm like, man, this guy's going to be like a third round pick. Well, that's not the case. Not the case at all. So where's he going off the board? Like seventh, eighth, ninth round? I'll do that all day long because he's an exciting, you know, talent. He's what I say, gorific. You know what I mean? He's like gets the juices flowing, baby.
Oh, man. The guy is the fantasy guru. He has the website to prove it, fantasyguru.com. He's got the Twitter handle, fantasy_guru. What's the deal with that, by the way, Guru? Did somebody take fantasy guru? You had to go underscore?
I did. I had to go underscore. I signed up for Twitter March of 2009. I actually wrote for the last edition of fantasyguru.com magazine. I wrote a somewhat prophetic piece about how, like, forget about everything in terms of gathering news for fantasy because it's all going to be in this thing called Twitter. But by then, someone had taken it, and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to even reach out to this dude and like buy it. I'm like, let me just do the underscore thing. So it's all good. But great to be on the podcast with you guys, Ross. You know I love you, but Evan, you're insane, dude, and I mean that in the good way. Just sickening coverage of the NFL for fantasy football. You are setting the standard, sir.
Thanks, Guru. That means so much, man.
Dude, the best part of this whole conversation is that Guru, this is like every movie ever where Guru's like the long-standing champion and he felt challenged by Evan, so he inflated his friendship with Chris Dolman to try to intimidate you. Like, yeah, dude, I know you're putting the time in, but I'm actually friends with these guys.
I just enjoyed breaking balls that evening. I was also drinking heavily that night, I should say, as Evan may recall. I was told I was going to give a speech. I think it was at like 5 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, let me take a couple of beers, drink a couple of beers, take the edge off. Because, you know, I could speak in front of a camera or behind a microphone to like a billion people and not even care. But I'm not great in a room. So I had like 2-3 beers. And then I didn't go on for like 4 hours later and I had like 14 beers. Apparently, I spoke for like 86 minutes.
Oh, that is amazing.
Oh, I dropped an F-bomb too, Evan. You recall that.
Yes, yes.
Guru, you're the man. Thanks for coming on.
You got it, guys. Later.
Oh, man. I love stories like that. I mean, look, I love the great fantasy insight, but stories like that, too many peers giving a speech. I love it. Almost as much as I love those of you that go to amazon.com/shop/RossTuckerNFL. My influencer page. Amazon says I'm an influencer. I don't know if they're right about that or not, but it makes me feel cool. Let's prove them right. Let's prove them right that Evan and I are influencers. Go to amazon.com/shop/RossTuckerNFL before you buy anything for Amazon, or just go to the new website, the new RossTucker.com, and click on the Amazon banner ad there. Other than that, that was awesome from Guru. It always is. Totally stuffed. Next week should be epic. We're getting closer and closer to Evan's Tears of Evan, which are the best in the business every single year. They are amazing. I will announce at least 2 more contestants for the August MFL 10 contest on next week's show. So take advantage of any of the sponsors at RossTucker.com, including the new one, betonline.ag. Send it to me, and I will hook you up, potentially. You'll be one of the potential contestants that I'll choose from. Oh, then I'm stuffed. iTunes rankings, comments, download multiple times, multiple devices. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at RossTucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar, because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.